back to the Paul Gallant Show, coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
The most interactive sports talk show in Houston, the American League lost 3-2 to the National League last night. Was Dusty Baker to blame with his lineup decisions? Actually, the decisions he made in last night's game were good. And I know there's some people out there who like to criticize Dusty Baker every single day and are acting like the reason that the Astros maybe won't win the World Series this year is Dusty Baker. But, I mean, he pinch hit for Shohei Ohtani. The guy he pinch hit for Shohei Ohtani got a hit. He ended up scoring what would be the go-ahead run. He really just got done in by putting George Kirby, a Mariner, of course, in the game. He allowed a double and RBI single in the fourth. That's one run. And it's also because he brought in Felix Bautista with a lead. This guy's got 23 saves, a 1.07 ERA, and he Rafael Montero'd it. Gave up a two-run homer in the eighth. National League wins. But Dusty didn't do a bad job. Y'all just some haters. Seattle was some haters as well. If you're somebody who really gets upset that players who were not members of the 2017 Astros are getting booed, you're doing this all wrong. You gotta learn to love the fact that this team is so good that they are going to get booed everywhere they go outside of two ballparks. Minute Maid and the one up in Arlington, because Rangers fans don't actually go to games. You gotta give them the respect that they deserve for being able to draw that kind of hatred. Somebody texted in a little bit earlier. It might have been a Twitch comment as well. The Astros saved baseball. They are the reason that people watch. I think that's not a bad take at all. People like to watch things that they hate just as much as they like to watch things that they like in sports specifically. Hell, there's some people listening right now. There's one texter who texts in every single day, and he hates the show, but he texts in every single day, and I'm so appreciative that he listens every single day because I know he's hate listening. I know there's a bunch of people out there that hate listen.
I'm hate listening. Oh, what?
Yeah, I can tell, Sean. I can tell. Man, that hurt my feelings. I thought we were friends. You know, I'm about to go on vacation.
I can't wait, yeah.
Is there going to be a coup when I'm gone? Sean Mapes Show.
No.
Featuring Del Ollier, right?
No, it'll just be, I don't know. I'll just be whistling on my way to work, you know, pepping my step.
A little pep in your step.
Yeah, for the next couple of days.
Damn, that hurts my heart. That hurts my heart. Attacks from the 832. The American League lost because Martin Maldonado wasn't catching last night. That is so true. How much better would Felix Bautista have been with Martin Maldonado's defensive mastery back there? Might have been three pass balls, but hey, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because Martin Maldonado is going to call the perfect game and probably hit two home runs like he has in the last two games he played.
He really should have been in the home run derby. I think it'd be great if they put in like one half is like actual good home run hitters, and then the other half is just like here's Martin Maldonado.
I want some analytics, Sean.
Yeah.
If Martin Maldonado continues at the pace he's hitting at, he had a home run on Saturday. He had a home run on Sunday. And if he hits a home run in every single game the rest of the year, I'm doing some math on the fly. The Astros have played 91 games. We're talking 162
71
games.
Left.
Home run record. Would ESPN cover it? No, because it's not the Yankees record. It's the actual home run record. But Martin Maldonado is currently on pace, based off of his last two games, to break the major league record for home runs. And people aren't talking about it. They're not.
What would happen? Like, how many straight games does he have to hit a home run before people are like, what is going on? Like one more?
Yes. It's just one
more. It's like the Joe DiMaggio hit streak
yeah.
for home runs. And it's Marty Maldonado doing it.
He will get drug tested as quickly as those NFL players who get drug tested after they do something that's ridiculous. Didn't Justin Tucker get that once? So, look, he's on pace based off the last two games to hit 71 more homers. He would have 78 home runs at the end of the year. He might be batting 172. Imagine if
he goes one for five. Goes one for five every night with one home run. You take it.
I don't think it's possible. If he were to hit a home run the rest of the season, I don't think it would be possible for him to hit under 200, though.
He just had to go like one for five, one for six every game.
Imagine if Baldy starts getting intentionally walked.
With the bases loaded. Barry Bonds.
Man, why didn't they have Baldy out there last night? Anyway, Will Anderson was the second pick that the Houston Texans made in the first round of this past NFL draft. They traded a lot to get him. They traded their own first round pick. They traded a second round pick to move up and select him. And because of that, because you could have theoretically had three players as opposed to one with early picks, he is going to have a lot of pressure on his shoulders this coming season. We heard from a couple of key figures in the Houston Texans about Will Anderson the last couple of days. First, it was D'Amico Ryans who had this to say about the third overall pick back at Texans OTAs.
Will has been, he's been great throughout camp. One thing about Will, you know, he's been the same guy who we thought we were getting when we drafted him, right? He's been on it every single day when it comes to just the effort, the tenacity that he plays with, the energy, everything about him is he's been that and more. So he and Will has gotten better each and every day. He takes coaching really well, and Doc has done a really good job of working with him, of honing in on just those small, fine details of his game. So Will has done a great job of absorbing coaching and being able to take it to the field and apply it. So it's been cool to watch.
I think one of the main reasons that Will Anderson was selected wasn't the production that he had at Alabama. I think one of the reasons he was selected had more to do with the attitude that he had while he was there, the leadership role that he seemed to have that set him apart from a lot of other Alabama defenders that have been in that defense. Anderson, I think the pick was just as much about the locker room influence he could be for a first-year head coach as much as it was about what he was able to do at Alabama. Now, again, it's early, and of course the head coach is going to wax poetically about the third overall pick, but you also heard some complimentary words from Laramie Tunsil about Will Anderson on the Pat McAfee show.
We needed a guy to come off the edge, and I'm glad we got Will. I'm glad Will's a part of the team. And now for sure, we're going to work in practice. Absolutely. He's going to make me better. I'm going to make him better. You know, that's the whole mindset of the whole team. You know, we're just trying to make each other better. But we get on Sundays, it'll be easy.
One of the things that I hate the most about the way NFL training camp has shifted is that offensive linemen and defensive linemen get less reps than they ever have against one another going up to the year. For the most part, most practices are going to be done in shells. And yes, you do have some training camp practices that feature guys in full pads. But what's, I think, really interesting about Anderson and the advantage that he might have compared to other young pass rushers going into their first season is that if you take a look at both sides of the Texans' offensive line, left tackle Laramie Tunsil, one of the best in the game. Right tackle Titus Howard, another very good tackle. He is going to get as good of a seasoning as he can going into the year, assuming that he stays healthy. Now, for those who are wondering what the Texans are going to do with Will Anderson when the season begins, from what I understand, they view him as a player that would be essentially playing as a wide nine. And I'm not going to act like I'm so good with football terminology that I understand the meaning of that like the back of my hand. But it seems like Will Anderson is going to be given the opportunity to just line up on the edge outside the tight end. So tight ends are going to have to chip him as he pass rushes. And then he will have I think, advantage on a lot of tackles because they're going to have to step out further and more quickly to stop him. And if you're in that wide nine role, you do have to stop things from going outside of you. But from a pass rush perspective, it's pretty advantageous to be put in that spot. And I feel like there is a chance that Anderson is productive because of that. Now, take a look at some past Texans rookies in their first season, the amount of sacks that they had. Go back to 2006. Mario Williams had 4.5. I would assume that 4.5, that is your bare minimum expectation for Will Anderson. There are unfortunate extra expectations on his shoulder because of what the Texans traded up to get. He might not meet those in his rookie season. So I think you got to be patient here. And just think about some of the other Texans that were drafted early that people were expecting a lot out of. Jadeveon Clowney only played 4 games his rookie season. He had 0 sacks. He had 4.5 sacks his second year where he was coming back from a couple of knee surgeries that he'd had over the course of the year before. J.J. Watt only had 5.5. That's a guy that we were talking about at the top of the first round. Now, at the end of the year, he gets that pick 6, and then like that frogged him into 2012, and he has the first incredible season of his career. That year, Brooks Reed had 6 sacks, and he was playing in much more of a, hey, I'm just rushing after the passer. Wade Phillips' defense was essentially this system where there's 5 guys in coverage, there's 1 safety back, and then there's 5 guys blitzing. So it's your 3 defensive linemen on the interior of the 3-4 scheme, and you had 2 guys that were blitzing to the outside. It was very predictable and kind of drove me crazy because they never changed it, and that's why the Patriots were able to destroy them the way that they did in the Letterman jacket game and in the playoffs too. But anyway, sorry, we're going all over the place here. To bring it back, Brooks Reed was able to be successful that first season, 6 sacks as a second round pick, because they were basically asking him to just go straight upfield. And I think that is what Will Anderson is going to have the opportunity to do with the added bonus of going up against guys like Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard during the offseason. The over-under for his sacks in his first season is 8.25 per DraftKings. With 17 games and with the way that he is supposed to play and with Jerry Hughes possibly lining up across from him, where Jerry Hughes almost had 10 sacks, I really think that it's possible for Will Anderson to get that over. So if I were a gambling man, I would take the over on that. We'll see what he does this coming season. I feel like you shouldn't put your expectations too high with Will Anderson. Be fair to him. I think he's drafted more as a culture guy than necessarily the guy that's going to come right in and produce. But I also feel like he can be productive in this defense, especially if they're asking him to do what I've heard they're going to ask him to do going into the year. Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call and to text in as well. Expectations for Will Anderson, year one. Let me know. Baseball changed some rules this offseason. Will they change them back for the postseason? Rob Manfred was asked about that yesterday. You'll hear from him next.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You do like me.
I just don't like you no more.
You do like me.
In the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the only sports radio show where the host hates sports. Come on, Paul.
Allegedly, Spencer. Allegedly. Rob Manfred is the commissioner of Major League Baseball. People love booing him. Only the Astros were booed louder than Manfred was over the last couple of days for the All-Star break in Seattle. Here's Rob Manfred during baseball's draft trying to say Grand Canyon University while announcing a draft pick.
Here he comes with the 6th pick.
With the 6th pick of the 2023 MLB draft, the Oakland Athletics select Jacob Wilson, a shortstop from Grand Union University.
Oh. Come on, man. Grand Union University, what are you? A Yankee from the Civil War? You can't butcher that on the sixth pick is really the big issue here. And Manfred does not handle being in front of a microphone very well, as evidenced by all the people getting pissed off at him for calling the World Series trophy a piece of metal, to him barely being able to say Bryce Matthews as he was being booed mercilessly for announcing a Houston Astros pick. But Manfred, in a press conference yesterday, talked about a couple of potential rule changes, one of which we could see by the start of the postseason. He said, after being pressed for it by MLB Players Association head president Tony Clark, who says that players want adjustments to the postseason pitch clock, Manfred said he'd continue to listen to players who want to loosen it up. He's leaning towards keeping the rules the same when the playoffs begin, but Manfred said that he's at the very least thinking about perhaps changing it. Here's something that he said. I would make two points. I do in general, and there's exceptions to this, including the extra inning rule. In general, I think you ought to play the postseason the way that you play the regular season. There's exceptions. Okay, I'm open-minded on that topic. Here's what my take has always been. I'm not the biggest fan of the extra inning rule until I saw it in action in the regular season and saw that it helps us avoid 18-inning meaningless games. But I do think that a 4 to 5 hour playoff odyssey in baseball needs no pitch clock. This is about expediting the regular season. This should not be something that we continue in the playoffs. The regular season, there's 162 games. We're even talking about potentially playing less games. There's too many and they're too long. That's why the pitch clock came into effect this year. But I am a big believer that they should go back to having zero pitch clock in the playoffs. Yes, perhaps it is good to have a pace like this for the entirety of the season, regular season and postseason. But the lack of a pitch clock in the playoffs, I love it. Every single moment is magnified. The 20 to 30 seconds before a pitch, you don't really mind it in the playoffs if it's a close game. You don't. So I am a believer that Manfred should go back to what they had before in the playoffs. You're doing it with the extra inning rule already. Why can't you do it with the pitch clock too? This should have been a regular season rule change, not a postseason rule change too.
Yeah, the whole like idea behind like waiting for a pitch, that works when you're actually anticipating the pitch, where you're looking forward to, it's building the drama of the game, and where then, you know, when it's in June 25th and it's the Marlins and the Phillies, it's going to be less anticipation. We kind of want to get this one through. But if it is like Yankees Red Sox in 2004, like imagine they're like, all right, chop, chop, Mariano. Like, let's get out of here. All right.
Right. Imagine if a pitch clock violation by a batter or by a pitcher decided a game too. You don't want that. And we have not seen that many violations all in all. I'm not sure what the total has been over the course of the season. It seems like players have adjusted pretty well after all the dragging their feet that they did going into the year. And Manfred even made sure to give them a little bit of credit for that. But I feel like you get rid of this thing for the playoffs.
Yeah, and like you said, it's the same thing with the like the extra or the guy on second to start extra innings. Like that. Imagine the playoffs. Like you lose because like your pitcher gives up a sack fly and then a ground out, and now you're down 2-1. Like, right. You know, like it is like a cheap way to lose, which then, you know, kind of leads the natural thing. It's like, so it's okay to lose a cheapie in the regular season, but not in the postseason.
Yes.
And it's definitely more wrong. I don't, there is a point to like that argument of like, well, then now you're just saying like, why are we even doing the regular season?
But someone made the point on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, Sean, it's Get Cricket. Get rid of the shot clock in the NBA playoffs, too. Then he said, Hell nah. Don't ever change it back. 4.5 hour games are dead to me. He said that it's the best rule change since Interleague. Good points. But for the playoffs, you want the game to be as it has been for years and years. And let's be honest, Sean, the regular season is becoming less and less important across all sports. Football's adding more regular season games. They also got rid of one bye team per conference and added another team into the playoffs for each conference. Baseball just did the same thing. Basketball, hockey, half the teams make the playoffs anyway, and you're playing 82-game seasons. You're playing 162-game seasons in baseball. The regular season is becoming more and more meaningless. Guys regularly take nights off, whether it's Dusty Baker giving Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, or whoever, rest night after rest night after rest night. You're seeing it in basketball with the load management. I'm sure soon you will see it in football, too. You do see it towards the end of the year when teams start clinching playoff spots. You've already minimized the regular season across sports. But the playoffs should not be minimized. And I actually think that the lack of a pitch clock in the playoffs adds to the gravitas of every single moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the idea with the pitch clock, is that there, when moments there, where there's not gravitas, pitchers are still just going to take forever. And now you have a boring game. And like,
right.
The difference with basketball is like, with the shot clock, like that actually speeds up the game. Like, not just like speeds it up time wise, but like it gets you more possessions in a game the lower the shot clock is. The guys are playing faster, you're getting more shots. In MLB, the difference with the pitch clock is that it is only taking the time where baseball is not being played out of the equation. So it's like, you know, if there's no play clock in football, well, you just get a lead and then just run out the clock. Like, you run the ball once and then walk off the field. You can run 10 minutes off the clock if you want. Like, the baseball is different.
One of the things, Sean, that led to the shot clock in the NBA, and I'm not sure if this was Texas Western who did this. I don't know if this happened in the movie Hoosiers, which again isn't a real thing, but hang on for a second. There was a very relevant moment in either regular or fictional basketball history where a team just held on to the ball for like 10 minutes. Like, they just stood with the ball.
Yeah, there's like the four corners, Dean Smith kind of offense.
But there was before that where there was no shot clock and you could literally have a lead and just go past half court and sit there and do nothing.
Games that ended like
5 minutes.
Yeah, like they would end like 10 to 2 or something, or 10 to 4.
Like, theoretically, that was possible. Now, maybe if somebody intentionally fouled you or something like that, then it goes away from that. But it had a reason to change it because it was trying to pick up the pace. But I don't think a shot clock in basketball versus a pitch clock in baseball, I don't think that's a fair comparison to make. By the way, we did get a new rule change for 2023 and 2024 in the NBA. In-game penalty for flops resulting in a technical free throw and a second coach's challenge awarded if the first challenge is successful. Okay, the second one, good, though more challenging and more players flicking their hand, twirling it around for replay. That's the last thing I want, especially in the last couple of minutes of a game. But this one I don't think is going to work out so well, because this actually might be something that ends up getting challenged a lot. In-game penalty for flops, I think that you've let things go too far to the point where the only way you are going to stop flopping in the NBA is if you literally execute them when it happens. Or maybe you give them the Brittany Griner treatment and you send them to a Siberian vacation house. Like, I don't think that it's going to change because all of a sudden technical fouls are given out for flopping. You could test a referee at the beginning of a game. Are they going to call every single flop? I would highly doubt it. And I think that we have let things get to a point in the NBA where a ref is going to be hard-pressed, no matter what peacocks, show ponies they might be, to actually call every single flop. And some guys have become so conditioned to it, like a James Harden, like a Trae Young, what, they're just going to stop? No. And I don't think the technical fouls are going to get them out of that habit. I hope this works. It's about time they do something about it, but I don't know that. I think this is a half measure. I don't think this is a full measure. I think the real way to go is to pull out a gun and shoot them on the spot.
Yeah, because they did, like, they introduced, like, $10,000 fines back when guys made a lot less money. They would do, like, fines, like, after games for flopping, but it's only, like, the most egregious, like Marcus Smart ones, where he lands, takes another step, and then jumps into the crowd. Yeah. It's like, it's only that, and you get it once. Like, it won't stop it'll stop like the most egregious ones, but it won't stop like the dark arts kind of things where you jump into a guy or you put your hand out. It won't stop the Trae Youngs and the Jimmy Butler, like, where it's part of the basketball play that they are drawing contact. But, like, we all know what they're doing.
Exactly. So,
and they can't legislate that out of the game.
Referees in the NFL used to have a gun to, like, signify the end of a quarter. Like, they'd shoot the gun up in the air. And now I think we can arm NBA referees. We really want to take flopping out. Again, this is the only way it's going to happen. This rule is a half measure. Real guns. Okay? Ja Morant, NRA spokesman, Paul Gallant, pushing for NBA refs to carry too. NBA refs also in the NRA so that we can stop flopping together. Huh? Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. Coming up next, it's one of our favorite segments, the John Wall Memorial Podcasting Awards. This player is not the greatest basketball player of all time, like one of this year's NBA rookies thinks. But he might be the greatest podcaster ever. You'll hear why next.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, right where you belong.
That song belongs to me!
Back to the Paul Gallant Show. Take the red pill with Paul and see just how far this rabbit hole goes. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We've been doing a segment called the John Wall Memorial Podcast Awards in honor of John Wall's visit on a podcast where he not only said that the Rockets were a trash organization. Nah, facts. He also said that he and the Washington Wizards would have beaten LeBron James if they'd ever played them in the playoffs. It was just some bold takesmanship. Paul George is somebody considered by second overall pick Brandon Miller to be the greatest basketball player of all time. It's because Brandon Miller said he's never seen Michael Jordan. Oh, he just got drafted by the Charlotte Hornets. You might want to change that, bub. But Paul George has his own podcast. I'm not sure, Sean, who the guest was here. They were talking about meeting Larry Bird.
So the guest was Tyrese Halliburton, who's the point guard for the Pacers.
Just got an extension.
Yeah, all-star, just got an extension.
Cried about it at the press conference, credited his mom. It was actually a very cool moment.
Yeah, he's a cool guy, it seems like. And he talked about meeting Indiana legend and former coach, he was a GM at some point with the Pistons. Now he's a consultant, Larry Bird. And the way in which he met him was after, like, a workout just coming off the court. And then here's the end of Tyrese Halliburton. And then Paul George talks about how one of his co-hosts met Larry Bird.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Meet Larry Bird with my toes out? That's nuts.
Like, why y'all post this like
he
that?
He met him with his out, so.
Whoa! Damn!
Bro. All right, that was wild.
That's it. Okay, that was too much.
Damn! Wow. That's how we
that was crazy.
You
edited that one.
Yeah.
Pete, you could have used another word, Pete.
That was crazy.
You could have used another word.
He did. So he met him in the stall.
Word.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
technically, he met him with his d- out.
Yeah, but that was a crazy sentence. Like, I didn't know where we were going with that one.
I knew, but I didn't want to go. Yeah. I was saying where I was at.
He was like, huh?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
That was the biggest
one. It's a good story.
I could have eased out. I could have eased into that one a little bit.
You said it like mean, too.
It was aggressive. It was hella aggressive.
Like, out.
Yeah.
That was wild. I could have eased into that.
No, here's the thing. Paul George didn't have to ease into it. That was great. These guys are getting upset, and look, this is the problem with athlete podcasts for the most part. They're just not funny, and they lack suspense or unpredictability. And generally, the only guys who are successful as podcasters are able to develop breakout clips where somebody says something completely outlandish, and maybe somebody like me or Sean hears it, picks it up, and we decide to play it on the radio show, or you just see it on Twitter, Instagram Reels, TikTok, and the same kind of deal. Like, people are not consuming hour-plus-long podcasts. They're looking for the little bites. But I think Paul George actually has talent here.
He's really good at it. Like, basically every week, maybe it's even more often, but it feels like every week he has a guest, and there's at least one moment that becomes a great breakout video. And that, by itself, makes him one of the best podcasters
100%.
In the game, athlete or not. Like, he's just one of the best podcasters just because he can, every week he can deliver a moment, which is crazy because he, like, does an interview with these guys. It's not like him just, like, talking and hanging out and Paul George is saying something crazy. In this one, he kind of did. But normally he is asking questions and he's getting good responses. Like, he's a great interviewer.
He really is.
It's a crazy setup.
I mean, shoot, with Jalen Green.
Yeah, Jalen Green, another one.
He got Jalen Green to basically say, yeah, it might not be good for me to play with James Harden. And Paul George walked him into that by saying, yeah, it might not be good for you to play with James Harden. Paul George more so said it than Green did. And Paul, by the way, George might play with James Harden this coming season in L.A. Look, I'm not the biggest playoff P fan, but
Podcast P,
I like. Pinche texted in on the Twitch. Vanessa could probably get you Larry Bird for a segment. I actually could get Larry Bird myself because, like those two, I also have met Larry Bird, not with my Schmenzer out.
Nothing out? Toes out?
No.
Okay.
Before my first ever sporting event, my dad and I went to a Boston Celtics game at the then Fleet Center. We went to a bar/restaurant before. We're sitting at a table. My dad sees Larry Bird, all 6'8" of him, at the bar in a leather jacket. Larry Bird was famously unapproachable, but my dad had balls of steel and was a great salesman. He comes up to him and he says, hey, my son, who had just watched him the day before and learned all about him in this like 2-hour-long VHS tape. I had literally just watched and like knew everything about him all of a sudden. My son is a huge fan. Could you come up to him, talk to him? He came over. He could not have been nicer. Hey, Paul, you going to scream and cheer tonight's game? Took a picture with me. The picture got blown up by somebody that we knew at the Boston Garden. And Larry Bird autographed not one, but two, including one that says, to Paul, best wishes. I need to send him this picture and maybe we can get Larry on. And I'm just going to be like, hey, Larry, remember when you did that? That was awesome.
just
be that.
I also like that you met him at a bar, too.
I did. I met Larry Bird at a bar.
That's a very Paul Gallant thing of like, yeah, I was, you know, just had a Paloma.
It was a virgin Paloma because I was six. But
no, maybe not.
Well, you think I was drinking at six? I used to frown on people that drank. Not even kidding. Until I was 17. And then I was trying to impress somebody named Taylor. You're probably wondering, oh, what was the sex of this person named Taylor, Paul? I was trying to impress them. And I had a Bud Light. That was my first drink ever. And my God, it was so awful. And I was like, all this advertising, this is what they have all this money for advertising. This is it. Bud Light is the piss of the, no offense, of what, Sean?
I had to bleep that word in the Paul George.
Paul George clip. Am I not allowed to say that?
No.
I honestly, I had no idea.
You can say pissed off. You cannot say it referring to urine.
Can I say it's the pee-pee?
Yes.
All right. Bud Light is the pee-pee of all the light beers. We got some more nominations for the John Wall Memorial Podcast Awards that we will get to next before garbage time. It's the Paul Gallant Show. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Hear your family.
Look at our family now.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here is your ambiguously gay host, Paul Gallant.
Most interactive sports talk show in Houston. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in as well. We were doing another episode of the John Wall Memorial Podcast Awards. Athlete podcasters are everywhere. And we think that Paul George currently holds the title belt. He has overtaken Tyreek Hill. Until Tyreek Hill beats up somebody on his podcast, I don't think Hill can take it back. We haven't had as much content from Hill this offseason. I'm a little bit disappointed. This is athlete podcast season. This is his offseason. And I know it's offseason for the NBA and for Paul George too. But, I mean, Paul George has been delivering the hits.
Yeah, yeah. I think Paul George almost is... I think he's up there among, like, just podcasters in general.
Yeah,
athlete or
I agree.
Not. Like, I think he's just really good at this. I
totally agree. Nick Castellanos is somebody that we all know as the person who is always at bat to force baseball broadcasters to awkwardly transition from talking about something serious. Whether it was it Tom Brenneman, the Reds broadcaster?
Yeah, that's the famous one.
Being caught on mic saying a bunch of anti-gay things and then apologizing for it, only to say, and there's a deep drive by Nick Castellanos. There's a couple of other random examples of this that have taken place. People are sometimes reaching, I think, with those examples. But it is funny that there's a lot of moments where someone's awkwardly talking about something and then all of a sudden Nick Castellanos hits a home run or a double.
I think there was one about like ALS, like yes. Lou Gehrig Day a couple of weeks ago.
I think so. He is essentially somebody who farts at funerals, Nick Castellanos. So anyway, Castellanos was asked about a take that he has about his favorite superhero. And I got to say, like, I think we got to give him a podcast based off of this take.
Everyone was asked their favorite superheroes. Yeah. You said Scooby-Doo.
Sure.
I didn't realize Scooby-Doo was a superhero. Can you kind of explain his superhero lore?
I mean, well, first off, he's a dog, right? And he can talk.
Fair enough. Okay.
And he saves, he solves mysteries. So I think that a dog that can talk and helps people by solving mysteries, I think is a superhero.
Checks off all the superhero boxes, has special skills, and he helps people.
Correct.
It's a good point. Batman is a superhero, but Batman doesn't really have any superpowers. He just has a super wallet.
Yeah, if you're helping the greater good, I think you're a superhero. It has to be a big threat too.
Right. He is a talking dog. I mean, he doesn't say much, but
he says raggy.
He is a dog that's also a great detective.
Yeah.
And can talk. So yeah, honestly, he qualifies more as a superhero than Batman does. And Batman's my favorite. But Batman's more a vigilante than he is a superhero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think Nick Castellanos, the way that he said that, the way that he set it up, I would...
He has a take.
That is a take.
He has a take and he can defend it. That he's taken the baby steps to being a podcaster.
He did. I like it. Person who, honestly, I'm kind of disappointed in his most recent podcast performance as we continue the John Wall Memorial Podcast Awards segment of the week. Rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Gilbert Arenas is a crazy person, as evidenced by his time with the Washington Wizards, where he brought a gun into the locker room and pulled it on Javaris Crittenden, as also evidenced by some videos where he is essentially like that annoying neighbor that will not leave Nick Young, Swaggy P, alone. Look those videos up. Those videos are the weirdest.
They're like uncomfortable. Like,
very uncomfortable.
It starts off as kind of funny, and there's so many and goes on so long. It's uncomfortable.
Totally agree. So, Gilbert Arenas had Zion Williamson on. And they did such a terrible job with Zion Williamson. So not only is it four guys up on a stage, and then Zion Williamson just comes up on stage and he's standing. No one offers him the seat. Terrible job by all the other podcasters there. But they didn't give him a microphone. And we're not going to play the audio of this because it's inaudible. But Gilbert Arenas doesn't ask Zion Williamson about Mariah Mills. He asks Zion Williamson about, like, eating. And Zion says, like, yeah, man, like, I eat a lot of food.
It's tough. You have so much money and you're 21. It's hard not to eat. That's basically what he said.
And, I mean, no one, like Gilbert Arenas, master troll, didn't say, well, Zion, you've become a fatty boom batty. Didn't say that. Honestly, I feel like that would be something Gilbert would do, because I bet he's done that in the past. And on top of that, like, you know, Mariah Mills is somehow still finding a way to squeeze all of the clout she possibly can out of this used toothpaste canister. Here she recently, in an interview that she did with TMZ, said that apparently people are still, from the NBA, are still hitting her up, even though she was extorting Zion Williamson online so that he would make good on his $100,000 monthly allowance. Do we have Mariah Mills? Here is Mariah Mills talking about how the guys still want her. Okay, my bad. But anyway, I Zion Williamson with Mariah Mills. Like, Mariah Mills could be a podcaster. Zion Williamson, bad podcast guest. Gilbert Arenas, bad podcast host. The biggest question that everyone wants to know is, bro, what are you doing?
And you're Gilbert Arenas. You could ask that question and get away with it.
Right.
Like, what? There's some people who, like, just can't ask that question. But I feel like Gilbert Arenas, part of it is the confidence to just ask it, and he has it.
It's a sad day.
Watch, it's like they have the same agent or something, and that's why he could get them on but couldn't ask the fun stuff.
100%. He is Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's time for a little garbage time.
I'm only happy when it's garbage. And then I start eating garbage.
If there's one guy up here who knows about total garbage,
garbage,
it's this guy. It's garbage time with Paul Gallant. Let's go.
Let's go.
Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg. Yes, it's made it to garbage time one more time. Did you see Mark Zuckerberg shirtless?
I was a little upset by how, like, in shape he is.
He's shredded. He posted a picture in a training session with Israel Adesanya
and nice.
Alex Volkanovski.
I you nailed Adesanya, though. That's a good job.
Well, thank you. But anyway, there's a picture of all three of them. It looks like they've been, you know, having a nice little workout together on the mat. And I gotta say, Zuck's got some abs. Zuck's got some shoulders. Zuck's got some pecs. Zuck is in slightly better shape than me. Credit to Mark Zuckerberg. Billionaire philanthropist. Inventor of Threads. Stealer of Facebook.
Stealer of Threads, too.
No. That no one's ever come up with that. Elon's got to post the shirtless pic back. Because, I mean,
better
Elon's been calling Zuck the cuck. Well, like, Zuck could call Elon the fatty boom batty. Like, he is not in good shape.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see Elon shirtless anytime soon.
Because he's a coward. Like, yeah. he's calling Zuck a cuck. Like, who do you think people would want to bleep between those two? I know that Elon Musk is tall and all, and that he had the, like, Amber Heard, Cara Delevingne alleged three-way that was found out in the trial between the civil court trial between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. But, I mean, I got to say here, one of these guys has more sex appeal, more riz than the other, and it is Zuck.
Yeah.
Zuck the cuck. Zuck's going to make Elon Musk a cuck.
The only thing holding Zuck back is that he's a family man. He chose to be a family man.
He did.
That's the issue.
Is he a family man, though? Or is he, like...
He's married.
Is he well...
No, he's married, and he hasn't had...
Bill Gates was married.
He doesn't have threesomes coming out in the court of law. So we can't confirm or deny.
I mean, Bill Gates had his, like, once-yearly thing.
All right, show's over.
What? I'm not trying to... What, you think we're going to get in trouble or something
like
that?
No, it just...
That was a thing!
Are you talking about him with Epstein?
No!
Oh,
no!
I thought that's where you're going.
No!
Okay.
Although, well, you
time
you
to go to break.
That's going to wrap up today's Paul Gallant Show. No, he has like this college lover that he would like hang out with in a cabin once a year. Not on Epstein's Island. He's Sean Mapes. I'm Paul Gallant. The Killer Bees are up next. So long, farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Wednesday. Peace!
I mean, well, first off, he's a dog, right? And he can talk.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're hooked up with it.
Toss a coin to your witcher.